Are you troubled by strange hockey trades in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread about NHL free agency?
Have you or your family ever seen a New York Islanders game?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your mobile device and subscribe to Lighthouse Hockey Podcast from SB Nation today.
Our courteous and efficient hosts are ready to serve all of your Islander needs and worries.
Lighthouse Hockey Podcasts for New York Islanders fans.
Hello, 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 everyone. Welcome to episode number 20 of Unformidable. I'm Rob Wolf, and here at Unformidable, we take a look at some of the less heralded or more obscure Mets in our beloved franchise's quirky history, as every player who dons the orange and blue is, in their own way, unformidable. Speaking of quirky history, oh my god, the Mets are streaking. This is utterly delightful, unprecedented. My friend Rob Ward, friend of the show, but no friend of mine, no, really, he's a friend of mine, texted me, I have no words, I have absolutely no words, and which amused me, because then like hours later I saw that was kind of the deck for Chris McShane's article about Friday night's comeback win against the Nationals. He said, I am speechless, I am without speech, unfortunately, here in podcasts, we need to have speech, so we'll have to go on and make up some words, but this is just delightful, and I just kind of love how, again, in our franchise's quirky history, somehow as a fan base, I think we embrace more, I guess it's in our DNA, as they say, the improbable comebacks and the improbable turns. It seems more natural to us than just dominating from start to finish, doesn't it? Very exciting times to be a Met fan, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, and let's embrace it and enjoy it. It does remind me a little of 2015, although I don't think we were ever this far out of it in 2015, and I think I had more of a sense that that 2015 team could or should be competing, if only could get a minuscule amount of offense. I love watching this offense, and you know, it does feel like we're not out of games, which is exciting. So anyway, my point is, the Mets are streaking, and that put me in mind of streaks, and one of the many suggestions kindly sent in by people who have been generous enough to listen to this put their time into listening to this show, is someone who in their time as a Met is primarily known for his streak. So the subject of today's Unformidable is Mike Vail. Mike Vail was originally drafted straight out of high school by the Los Angeles Dodgers in the 17th round of the 1970 draft. He declined signing with the Dodgers and chose to attend De Anza College. 7 months later, as a freshman, the St. Louis Cardinals selected him in the fourth round of the January 1971 secondary draft and signed him. I really need to have some of the minors guys on this podcast to explain to me how the draft has changed since the 70s, with kids getting drafted as college freshmen and secondary drafts in January. I apologize. I need to do some research on this, but I'm fascinated reading it. Mike Vail put up decent but not dramatic numbers in his first 3 years in the Cardinals farm system. You know, at age like 19, 20, 21, he hit .256 with 27 homers and 158 RBIs through those first three seasons. But in 1974, his fourth season in the organization, he kind of exploded, dividing his time between Class A and Double A. If you add up those stats for that minor league season, he hit .334, 15 homers, 76 RBIs, .898 OPS. Don't really know how he was regarded as a prospect, but in the 74 offseason, he was traded with Jack Heidemann to the Mets for infielder Ted Martinez. Martinez and Heidemann were both, you know, light-hitting, defense-first utility infielders. I didn't see a statistical or dramatic age difference between them, so in the swap, the Mets picked up a decent, burgeoning 23-year-old prospect. So, Mike Vail was traded to the Mets. Now is the point in the podcast where we typically segue to Mike Vail's time as an unformidable New York Met. However, as a public service announcement, I must back up a bit. For it is with great pomp and circumstance that I bring you the information, in case you're not already aware of it, that in his time with the Gulf Coast Cardinals in 1971, Mike Vail was a minor league teammate of a young 18-year-old catcher named Randy Poffo, who would someday better be known to us and the rest of the world as Randy Macho Man Savage. Vail did an interview with the WWE, or some magazine seems to be affiliated with them. I'm unfortunately not into the wrestling anymore, but I was in the late 80s when Randy Savage was in his heyday. But in the interview with the WWE, Vail described Poffo as a, quote, darn good little catcher. And Vail actually was right to be impressed. With the Gulf Coast Cardinals in 1971, future major leaguer Mike Vail hit for a 620 OPS in 35 games, whereas Randy Poffo slashed 286, 420, 492 for a 912 OPS in the same amount of games. So, you know, could have gone in a very different direction, I guess. I'll briefly note that Poffo didn't get out of A-ball by 1974 himself, which, again, actually wasn't that different than Vail's career path in the 70s. But his numbers definitely cratered in 74, or perhaps he was just inspired by the gods to create the wrestling character that he would become. But Poffo got out of baseball in 1974, and perhaps that was for the best. I mean, he did show some promise as a prospect, but, you know, as a baseball player, he probably wouldn't have been iconic enough to, if we believe the good place can predict the future, he probably, as a baseball player, would not have been iconic enough to someday have Jacksonville rename their airport Randy Macho Man Savage Non-International Airport, as depicted in The Good Place, and as I hope someday will truly come to pass. So now that we've gotten the important business of future Met Mike Vail's connection with Randy Macho Man Savage out of the way, let's get to Mike Vail's time as a New York Met. So in the 74 offseason, traded to the Mets, and he was assigned to AAA, where at age 23, if anyone doubted his seemingly smaller breakout in the minors the previous year, he doubled down. He slashed 342. His batting average was 342, 396 on base percentage, 502 slugging, which enabled him to earn the International League Player of the Year award in a season in which he would get called up to the Mets in mid-August and not even quite finish the year there.
Hey, I'm Spencer Hall.
I'm Holly Anderson.
I'm Ryan Nanny.
I'm Jason Kirk, and we're the hosts of the Shutdown Fullcast, your Avengers of College Football podcast. It says here in the script I'm to riff on what that means, and basically what I mean is it's all already spoiled.
Every Tuesday, we talk about everything from cooking disasters to pro wrestling to unfashionable pants we wore in middle school.
We also do talk about college football every now and then, like mascot fights, announcers fleeing the booth early, and unfashionable pants that coaches wear now.
If you want to take college football exactly as seriously as it should be taken, subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.
Hi, Daniel.
Hi, Amanda.
We get to tell everyone about the new pod, Eater's Digest.
Eater's Digest, that is right, our brand new podcast. It is available now.
It's everything you need to know about the world of food every week with a little help from the biggest names in the industry and food journalists from the Eater Newsroom.
We're going to talk about everything from the worst things that diners do in restaurants to fake meat. We're going to talk about food delivery tech. We are going to argue a lot about how to best behave in restaurants.
Oh yeah, big time. So many things.
Food,
I mean, there's
politics.
Nothing we can't touch.
Food and politics?
Food and politics, maybe.
Yeah,
yes, food and politics comes up.
Yep.
It might make you laugh. It might make you think. It might even make you hungry, Daniel.
So subscribe to Eater's Digest for free today on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.
So Vail gets called up to the big club in August of 1975, August 18th to be specific, or at least he made his debut on August 18th. Not sure when the procedural move was. So in the fifth inning of a game at the Houston Astrodome, Mike Vail made his major league debut as a pinch hitter. He faced Astros ace J.R. Richard, who, you know, I briefly remember seeing pitch as a young man and was incredibly dynamic, and whose career was tragically cut short by a stroke he suffered. I don't remember if it was in a game or before a game. I'd have to look that up, but it's one of my earlier baseball memories. He was just one of the most exciting pitchers I remember seeing as a young man, and yeah, that was just unfortunate that his career was cut short like that. Mike Vail singled in that major league debut off of, you know, not an easy task, off of a fireballing ace like J.R. Richard. And although he went 2-for-10 over his next three games, and then on August 24th, he pinch hit again and walked, Vail pretty much didn't stop hitting. That 8-24 pinch hit appearance with a walk was his last game without a hit for quite some time, as Mike Vail would commence on a hitting streak that would match the National League rookie record of 23 games. The day after that pinch-hitting appearance, the Mets traveled to San Diego, I think August 25th. Mike Vail went 4-for-4 with two doubles, and yes, just kept on hitting. In the next 21 games, he recorded at least one hit for a 22-game hitting streak that he brought to Shea on September 15th. And he extended it to 23 against Expos ace Steve Rogers with a RBI single on the sixth inning, extending the hitting streak to 23 games, which tied two Phillies, Joe Rapp and Richie Ashburn, for the longest hitting streak by a National League rookie. And that ball that he hit off of Steve Rogers was sent immediately to Cooperstown. Interesting side note that I did not know, the next day, September 16th, Mike Vail actually got 8 plate appearances to try to get the record to himself, get it to 24 games, as it took the Mets 18 innings to beat the Expos 4-3, but alas, Mike Vail went 0-for-7 with a walk in that game, bringing his very exciting hitting streak, it started 4 games into his career, 3-4 games into his career, which is pretty amazing time to go on such a streak. Ending it at 23 games. The hitting streak was actually a Met record at the time, which was eventually eclipsed first by Hubie Brooks in 84 with 24 games, which was matched by Mike Piazza, I think, in 1999. And I totally forgot till I was researching this article, was eclipsed by Moises Alou in 2007. I must have blocked that out, like a lot of the 2007 season, but Alou hit in 30 straight games that season. As a National League rookie record, it was obliterated by Benito Santiago in 1987. He has a 34 game hitting streak, which was still a National League record, or at least a National League rookie record. At any rate, in 38 games in 1975, Vail hit .302, put up an OPS of .759, which was good for an OPS plus of .115. And in only 38 games, put up 1.3 WAR for the Mets. So they clearly, and I guess rightly, you know, saw him as a future star. Seems a little Jeff McNeil-ish to me. You know, comes up late, shows incredible hitting ability. So I see the enthusiasm. So the Mets were sold, and in the offseason in 1975, they traded star right fielder Rusty Staub to the Tigers, primarily to make room for Vail. Unfortunately, Mike Vail dislocated his foot in the offseason playing basketball, right before the season started, and he didn't play in 76 until mid-June, and he had an absolutely lost season that year. He had a 509 OPS, good for a 49 OPS plus. Because the season started late with injury and he struggled so badly, he only got in 53 games, less played appearances than the previous season. He didn't hit a home run, and it was good for a negative 1.1 WAR over those 53 games. So as exciting as that first little portion of a season was, the 76 season was quite stunningly disappointing. So the bloom was probably off the rose a little there, and he struggled very early in 1977, then briefly flashed, maybe not that briefly, but he flashed his form again, hitting .417 over a 22-game period starting on May 2nd. At one point, he was actually leading the National League in average with a .363 average near the middle of the season. But he had an absolutely brutal stretch drive in August and September, hitting under .200 in each month. And that brought his numbers in 77 down to a much more pedestrian .262 average, .708 OPS, .94 OPS plus, so a little below average. Also, 0 for 7 in stolen base attempts. I mean, why keep trying? He hit what would actually wind up being a career high 8 home runs that year. So again, started off, had a nice little run, but, you know, between the previous season in 76 being incredibly disappointing and a pretty bad end to 77, Vale was no longer seen as a future, you know, star or even key piece. And when he hit only .143 in spring training in 1978, the Mets promptly waived him. From there, Vale had mostly a journeyman career. He was picked up by the Cleveland Indians off of waivers, where he spent very little time. His only time in the American League was a scant 14 games and 34 at-bats before he was traded to the Cubs on June 15th of 78. And he had a decent run with the Cubs. He actually had his best overall seasons as a Cub, mostly on the short side of an outfield platoon, where he would the right-handed half of a platoon. In 179 plate appearances in 1979, he hit .335 with an .899 OPS and .134 OPS plus. With the bat, absolutely his best season. You know, not world-beating, but hey, hit .335. Still, well, back then that was very impressive. I know Alex Bregman wouldn't be impressed, but Jeff McNeil would be. But Vale was traded away from the Cubs after the 1980 offseason, and from there it was pure journeyman mode. He spent time with the Cincinnati Reds, San Francisco Giants, Montreal Expos, and the Los Angeles Dodgers, and he retired after the 84 season with the Dodgers. In all of those seasons, only in 82, after he left the Cubs, only in 1982 with Cincinnati did he record more than 100 plate appearances in a season. And aside from some decent numbers, primarily as a pinch hitter with the Expos in 83, he was primarily, you know, a sub replacement level player, generally recording somewhere from negative 0.4 to positive 0.6 WAR, according to Baseball Reference, the 0.6 with the Expos in 83. For his career, Vale appeared in 665 games, had 1,604 at-bats, 34 homers, 219 RBIs, and he slashed .279, .313, .400, .713 OPS, .96 OPS plus. So, you know, for that era, pretty average player. I do love 3 stolen bases and 17 caught stealings. I mean, you know, I love the stolen base. I miss it. But, you know, I suppose that's a place where modern baseball has really improved the judiciousness of when it's a good idea to run. Vale put up his best offensive numbers with the Cubs. You know, for the Mets, he appeared in 199 games, 626 plate appearances, .673 OPS, .89 OPS plus. For the Cubs, he appeared in 275 games, although almost the same amount of plate appearances, 708, and more of a pinch hitter platoon player than an everyday guy. But he hit .317 as a Cub with an .804 OPS and a .114 OPS plus. And while his best season by WAR actually was that his very first season, where he broke through with the Mets in 75, 1.3 according to Baseball Reference, that brutal 76 really brought him down, so he put up a 0.4 WAR according to Baseball Reference as a Met, 2 as a Cub. But Vale really always, probably because of that the excitement of that debut, really thought of himself as a Met, or at the least, I should say, he seemed to remember that time the most fondly. In that same interview where he reminisced about the Macho Man, he also reminisced about coming from AAA, quote, like a little kid's dream to come to New York City. I tell people all the time, the first day I reported, Willie Mays was in the clubhouse, you know, as a boy. He grew up in San Jose. He grew up watching Mays and McCovey. And, you know, he said getting to New York with Willie Mays as a coach was unbelievable. And he further said, New York will always be my favorite town and team. I mean, why wouldn't it be? Good taste, Mike Bell. He said, New York will always be my favorite town and team because I came up with the Mets. I came up here and was here for such a short time. I was planning to be on the team for quite longer, but I had that bad injury in the offseason. It's just mixed feelings. I guess I'm a little harder on myself than the fans are. Hey, that's nice. I always hear Met fans are so hard on people, but I guess we weren't so hard on Mike Vail. I guess sometimes that first love, that first flush, when someone debuts with such aplomb, it's hard to let them go. And Mike Vail certainly made quite the debut with the Mets with that 23-game hitting streak. And for that, Mike Vail is an unformidable New York Met. One final note I'll add, too, that I always love to look at the similarity scores on Baseball Reference, and if you want a couple of unformidable names, two of the 10 most similar batters to Mike Vail in their careers, number 5, Lestings Millage, number 6, Timo Perez. So how's that for some fine Met references? Vail is 67 today, still, I believe, living in California, according to what I could read, but does appear at Met events, signing and reliving Met memories, as we love to do here on this pod. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to Unformidable. Please go to AmazonAvenue.com for more Mets-related content. Follow Amazing Avenue on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. How could you not want to follow the Mets and devour all the Met content you want these days? You can find this and all of our amazing pods wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify. Please subscribe, leave a review, it really helps. Original music by Bunga. I'm on Twitter at Wolf, WOLFFRR, and the show is at Unformidable. Thank you, and let's fucking go Mets.
Are you troubled by strange hockey trades in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread about NHL free agency?
Have you or your family ever seen a New York Islanders game?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your mobile device and subscribe to Lighthouse Hockey Podcast from SB Nation today.
Our courteous and efficient hosts are ready to serve all of your Islander needs and worries.
Lighthouse Hockey Podcasts for New York Islanders fans.
Hi, I'm Amanda Clute, editor-in-chief of Eater.
And I am Daniel Janine, a producer here at Eater.
And we are here to tell you about our brand new podcast, Eater's Digest.
Every week on the show, we dive into the weirdest, funniest, and most important stories in the world of food.
With the inside scoop from the biggest names in the industry and expert insights from the Eater newsroom.
It's a really fun time, so I would say subscribe to Eater's Digest for free today on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.